Thanks. There's more people in here than there was last year. I think last year I gave a talk against the student paper competition, and there was about five people in there. And I like to think that was because of the student paper competition and not because of me. Mike already mentioned the spider mites are becoming a little bit more of a nationwide pest, and that's certainly been the case. And because of that, and because they've become a pretty significant problem in the Mid-South, we're starting to do some more regionalized work. And what I'm going to talk about today is a pretty straightforward component of a regional project that we have going on. So I want to make sure I acknowledge the team members. I'm really just going to be the spokesperson up here right now. I'm not going to claim a whole lot of intellectual property rights on this. I want to acknowledge that in particular the Mississippi folks, because several of these folks have been leading this charge in Mississippi. This actual protocol was drawn up and put together by Jeff Gore. That's why his name's underlined there. But Angus Catchout and Smitty, John Smith, have been leading the charge at spider mite research in the Mid-South and Mississippi in particular for several years now. And so these folks were kind of the backbone of this. These are all the different states and the individuals involved. One thing you'll notice is there's five locations, or five groups of people anyhow, that are in dark letters, black letters. Those are the people that actually submitted data this year, and I think it'll become apparent why in a minute why these other locations didn't necessarily submit data to me. And this is why. In the upper Mid-South in particular, but really throughout much of the Mid-South, we were characterized by wet early, wet in the middle, and wet late. This is a picture I took in the early season. The only thing that could make it more appropriate would have been if it had been raining if I took the picture, because we just had tons and tons of rainfall. That heavy rainfall can have a direct impact on mite populations by washing mites off the plant. One thing that showed up this year that really hasn't been very consistent player in the last few years is the mite fungus, the Neozygaetes fungus. It showed up and populations crashed very often during the middle of the test that I'm going to talk about. That hasn't been a big player in recent years, and I think Angus, in fact, made the comment to me a month or so ago that it's really the first time he's had to deal with it in his career. So I thought that was interesting. The other thing it did is it kind of messed up our yield data that we were able to collect. In fact, I felt in our test, for example, that we had some yield differences. The problem was they all fell on the ground because we got a lot of rain, and the hard lock really kind of leveled the playing field. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about all the rates here. I think you can see them all. The point I want to make is we put about every miticide, every true miticide that was in there, and we also included Brigade, which is a insecticide / miticide. You can see the rates there. There's not a lot of cut rates. We're using pretty high rates. We didn't skimp on the rates. You'll see some of the treatments like Zephyr and Oberon were relatively low rates at 4 ounces, but on the other hand, we had those same treatments at high rates, 12 and 8 ounces. Protocol was really pretty straightforward. This is more or less a squirt and count type of protocol. Randomized complete block, four reps, four row plots. Some people put out two row plots if they're putting out backpack spray applications, and then they'd leave a buffer between those things. Using just good insect mite control application technology. One of the things we tried to do at the beginning of the application, or at least was in the protocol, was that we would record plant nodes, plant height, node above white flower at the time of first application. We were really targeting trying to get these applications out sometime before node above white flower 5 plus 350 DD60s. And the only reason we were trying to do that is we were also interested in looking at yield effects, and we thought if we put it out too late, we would miss that opportunity. We were supposed to rate at the time of application and 12 days after the first application, essentially symptoms of spider mite injury. And then, of course, we counted spider mites at 4, 8, and 12 days after applications, with the idea that we would make a follow-up application. Depending on whether certain treatments required it, we'd make that follow-up application to everything. As it turned out, we never needed a second application at any location. And another real key point that we wanted to do is try to collect some yield. We've all been bad about chasing these spider mites. They're real spotty. They pop up here and there. And we're real bad about not following up and getting yield data and trying to determine what the benefit of our treatments have been. The analysis was really straightforward. Really, the only two variables I'm going to show and analyze were the effective treatments on spider mite populations and yield. To be blunt, we didn't do a real good job of following our own protocol, and part of that was the difficulty we had fighting the weather and just getting these mite trials out. The data wasn't very balanced. I grouped our mite population ratings as 3 to 5 days after application, 7 to 9 days after application, and then 10 or more days after application. Use PROC mixed, LS means, and PDIF for mean separation. Now you'll note on the bottom that all our applications, depending on the state, were made during that really early bloom window up to about note above white flower 5 plus 350. So it varied considerably. This is just a summary of the impact of treatments at 3 to 5 days after location across four locations. We actually had five test locations, but only four of them had data in this time frame. First thing I'll point out is the scale. We had about 160 mites per 10 square inches using these Bayer ScoutSmart inch. I think everybody's familiar with those things to count mites. That sounds like a lot of mites, but it's really not that many mites. We very often see quite a bit more than that. I think the second thing that shows up at 3 to 5 days after application is there isn't a lot of treatment differences other than we could very easily separate things from the untreated check. Going the next step further, 7 to 9 days after application, you'll note that the mite populations, even in the untreated plots, dropped considerably. Went from a scale of, 140 mites per 10 square inches down to less than 80 mites per 10 square inches. This is some of this effect of the rainfall and the mite fungus affecting our test. In this case, we have all five locations. Again, not a lot of mean separation here other than the untreated check separating from everything. You will notice, and I think it's probably a trend, but it's just a trend, that's all I can say, that some of our higher rate things tend to go to the left. You take, for example, the Zephyr 4 and the Oberon 4 ounces, they're closest to the check. The higher rates kind of migrated to the left. That's what we'd expect based on our experience, but statistically didn't separate. By 10 to 14 days after application, there's really only two locations that even attempted to collect these data, and that's because the mite populations had essentially crashed to zero. And that's one of the difficulties you deal with entomologies. Things aren't always very predictable. The graph looks essentially the same as the previous graph, however. Really no changes in there. I will say, it was remarkable how consistent everything was. And this is just kind of the broad overview. And the only reason I put this slide in there showing all the different days is just to make a point of that arrow. And that arrow is to make the point that we have some good treatments out there. We have some high-rate treatments out there. You don't see anything that zeroed out spider mites. In every case, they persisted. In fact, our best treatments and our worst treatments gave somewhere between 75 and 85% control. Yield data, not very compelling this year. Three locations were able to collect yield. Frankly, it's not really a big surprise that we didn't have a real obvious yield impact at either an individual location or across these three locations. There's just too much rainfall. The mite populations didn't persist long enough to cause season-long data in this particular case. Now, our next presenter is going to talk about a second, more complicated part of this regional project, and I think he'll hit on the yield issue a little bit more. Now, you look at this, the untreated check kind of falls to the left, and you say, well, maybe there's a trend there, but I really don't feel comfortable saying that because we got some very good miticide treatments right around it. I think this is just probably noise. I wanted to take just a minute. We've been doing a lot of miticide trials, efficacy trials, for the last several years, and so we do know some things beyond what we've done here. And in my experience, and a lot of these are kind of my conclusions, is when we've rated miticide trials in the past, we've discovered that, you really can't rate some of these products very effectively at 3 or 4 days. Some of them require 7 to 8 days to really fully evaluate how good they're going to be. My experience is they're not going to improve after that point, and very often mite populations start rebuilding, particularly when we're putting those applications out early in the season. We know that mite performance varies by time of season. We know that the brigade and dimethoate-type treatments have been very inconsistent early in the season prior to bloom. Some of those same treatments can do a fairly good job of holding mite populations back later in the season. So in Tennessee, we've been using a lot of Dicopol early. It's been cheap, it's been very consistent, and it fits very well. But later in the season, they'll start going to products like Brigade because of the pest spectrum. And one other thing I have observed is that we've been getting, of all these products, the one I see the most consistent rate response with is Oberon. If we're using 3 or 4 ounces of Oberon, it sometimes looks good, sometimes is a little bit iffy. If we start using higher rates, 6 or 8 ounces, I see that product improves its consistency quite a bit. And I think I've already mentioned that the speed of control of these products will vary considerably. In particular, products like Zeal and Oberon, in my experience, are the slowest. you can't really effectively evaluate those things at 3 or 4 days. Dycopol and I think Zephyr at 3 or 4 days, if they don't look good, they're not going to look good. And usually those products do look good because they do a good job. Same with Brigade or Dimethoate. If they're going to fail, you're going to know it pretty quickly. I'm going to skip that slide because it just makes those same points. And then I'm going to summarize it by saying that, you know, all our miticides did a good job of reducing spider mite populations. There's quite a few good miticide options. None of them are bulletproof or provide 100% control. In terms of yield and other effects, you know, just a tough year, a rough start. This is a project we're going to continue for at least another year. Thank you. Okay, well, the clock had me rattled here. You're supposed to start there. I thought I was going a little faster. You know, yield in our test wasn't really significantly affected by treatment, but I think that we all know that, especially in the case of something like aphids and spider mites, you know, environment is such a huge driver. And this was not the environment in the Mid-South to see consistent yield responses. I will say, despite all the early wet weather, that our mite populations were as high as I had ever seen them early season. And they persisted for a while until this fungus came in, but they just not build and didn't rebuild and didn't rebuild. We were actually artificially infesting mites out into our plot areas and trying to get them to spread, and it was very difficult. We had to do it several times. Fortunately, I have good help. Sandy Steckel, if you all haven't met her, is my technician, and her and my crew do a lot of good work, and they do most of it, to be honest.